Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Go to Central Ohio right now. Welcome one of our regulars. Always love talking to this guy. He's so darn connected. Making things happen. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of things happening in Central Ohio. Dorsey Hager is Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Mr. Hager, I got to ask you, I mean, the big story, and this is a national story, is the Intel project down there. And I know they broke ground about 6 weeks ago. How are we doing? Is everything moving in the right direction? Fill me in, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, everything's moving in the right direction. You and I have talked about this since the announcement last January, and we know with a job of this size and this scope and this magnitude, especially when you're dealing with the human element, that things are going to pop up with manpower needs, supply chain issues, schedules. Obviously, we have the unpredictability of weather here in Ohio. We've been fortunate the last couple of winters, but, you know, we have that unpredictability. But right now, you know, we're ahead of the game. We've got people out there moving dirt and stuff. They're getting ready to break ground after the first of the year. We're having discussions, I think, the week of Christmas. Yeah, Christmas is on a Sunday this year, isn't it? So, yeah, the week of Christmas, we're going to have discussions with Bechtel, who was announced. The world's worst-kept secret, but they were finally announced that they were the contractor for the two fabs and for the first $20 billion. But we have a meeting with Bechtel's team and our members of the managers and agents of the building trades, and we're going to talk about work assignments. We're going to talk about scope of work coming out. We're going to talk about packages. We're going to go over some designs and stuff just to get ready and gear up. And then I would say January 1st, we're going to hit the ground running. The underground's going to begin. We're going to start dispatching people out. I would say more laborers, more operating engineers, lots of iron workers, plumbers, pipe fitters, electricians. We're going to get them all dispatched out there to get the fab start coming, you know, pouring the cement, coming out of the ground. The only thing that I'm seeing right now in supply chain issues, I got to wrap my head around it a little bit better, is there's, and it's not just Intel, it's all of Central Ohio. I guess there was a change adopted from the federal government dealing with concrete and cement and stuff when it comes to the mixture and stuff. And there's an element that's been added. I think it's a type of limestone or something. And that's kind of set people back here in Central Ohio. And right now we're looking at, for a yard of concrete, the price has increased about $65 a yard because of this extra additive. So I'm sure we're going to talk about that here in a couple of weeks and what we're going to do. But it's exciting stuff. A lot of phone calls, a lot of emails, a lot of texts, people from all over the country, you know, inquiring about that, not just contractors, but maybe union workers that are in other parts of the country that are in markets that are slow or maybe a little soft or that love to work on these big data center and fabs and projects, you know, like in Portland and Arizona and Austin, also calling, inquiring, and we're taking all their information and we're getting ready to roll. But I would say probably by this summer, I mean, I don't know 100%, but I think the forecast that I'm looking at is probably about 5,500 people, maybe 7,000 on site by the middle of summer. So that's what we're hopeful for, and that's what we're shooting for, and I think that's what it's going to be.
Dorsey, you mentioned that $65 a yard increase on cement. Do you know percentage-wise how much of an increase that is?
I'd say it's about 35%.
Ooh.
This is a separate issue for a separate show, but it's really affecting the home builders and stuff, because, you know, when you're building a $400,000 home and you've got one part of the home that's 35% increase, it's really, you know, factoring into that, plus with home loans and mortgage rates going up and the Fed increases, which it looks like it's going to stall now for a little bit, which is good as inflation is dropping a little bit. But it's really going to affect that because, you know, we need homes, we need condos, we need apartments, we need hotels. You know, last week after our show, I was, you know, driving home to start the weekend and later in the day, and I got a call from a local banker here, large bank, and they said, hey, we're finalizing a deal to build 30 hotels in Licking County, and that's where Intel and Facebook is in Licking County. They're like, we're finalizing a deal to build 30 hotels. You guys got the people to build it, right? And I'm like, oh, yeah, we got the people. Sure, go ahead, build the hotels. Those people out there are going to have a place to stay, too. So,
Dorsey, I'm glad you shared that information with us regarding the cement, because on this end, I was hearing that the cement prices were going up because of the infrastructure bill and the demand, you know, obviously with highway construction and all that. But that's interesting. And so they're adding limestone, which is, I would imagine it's going to be stronger for the concrete. I don't know. There's got to be some scientific reason why they're doing that. But again, there's going to be a cost factor, and that's going to affect just about everything in the country. While we're talking about building, let's plow into this PLA signing with Honda. Honda's expanding. And also, what's going on with the Hollywood Casino Hotel? Can you fill us in there?
Yeah, so Honda, obviously, huge announcement. Again, probably one of the worst-kept secrets since the end of the summer. But they had picked Fayette County in Jeffersonville, which is right off of Cincinnati, or right off of 71, halfway between Columbus and Cincinnati. They had picked a huge industrial site there that was prepped and ready to go for whoever wanted to come in and take over the site to develop it. But they had taken over a site there and purchased, and they're going to build on it. And it's going to be their electric battery plant for their electric vehicles. So right now we're probably looking at about $4.5 billion with infrastructure and everything, probably closer to $5 billion, anywhere from 4,300 to 55 tradespeople down there. When the job's complete, Honda will employ about 2,300 workers at the site. So I know people in Southwest Ohio are really happy and looking forward to the project. Obviously, when we began our discussions with Honda, which we have a tremendous relationship with, special relationship that we've had since the 80s when they first built the motorcycle plant, then expansion into the car plant, all the way up in the transmission plant, paint booth expansion here a few years ago when I first took over the building trades, and now this electric battery vehicle plant. You know, Honda reached out, and obviously their concerns were manpower. You know, we talk about it all the time. I talk about it to my members. I met with some people who are looking to come and build here in Central Ohio this week, and they always have two questions. Do you have the people to build it? Do they accurately reflect the community in which we're building in, which means women, people of color, and also veterans? We answered those questions well. We went through the timeline and the schedule with them. We obviously told them that we could take care of this for them. We negotiated a project labor agreement, which is a standard set of rules and working conditions for all the trades and all the contractors that are going to be on the project. And they agreed to it, and we agreed to it, and we're got to sign off on it and had an event down there at Honda a couple weeks ago, and we're really excited about it. Packages for that are going out. They started moving dirt on November 15th. They want to break ground right after January 1st. It's an aggressive timeline, and it's an aggressive project. By the early part of 2024, they want to be mass-producing batteries that will meet EPA standards and all the other standards for electric vehicles, with the hopes of, by the summer of 2024, producing batteries to go to market. So, very aggressive timeline, but we're gonna hit the benchmarks. We're going to get them the people. We're going to get them the quality people, and we're going to help this project come in on time, under budget, and done safely. And we're going to continue that relationship with Honda, and we're going to continue these relationships with these mega projects that seem to be calling Ohio their home.
How are we doing with the apprenticeship programs? I mean, you keep mentioning about getting that workforce.
Yeah.
I think I know where we're going with this.
No. I mean, it's a tremendous opportunity. I mean, she's been on your show before, and I know she gets calls also and texts and emails from all over the country. Kelly Harrop, our communications and outreach director, works closely with Leland Bass, our program manager on building futures and driving futures. We're just having amazing outreach events. We had one at Hilliard a couple months ago. We'll come in the door. We had an outreach event that we followed up at Groveport Madison where we had over 1,000 people come in the door. You know, the incredible opportunity for us is that we have the ability to go out, whether it's a kid that's in eighth grade or a kid that's a junior or a kid that's a senior. I met with a group of seniors this week. I can sit down and I can tell them, no matter what your passion or what your interest is in or what your ability is in, whether you want to be an electrician or a laborer or a pipe fitter or an insulator, like you fill out this, you go to Building Futures or you apply for this trade and you get accepted. And, you know, once you finish your apprenticeship, you know, you're looking at 20 to 25 years of continuous work because of all the projects that are going on. Plus, you mentioned at the beginning, and we haven't even gotten into the infrastructure yet. You know, you're looking at 20 to 25 years of continuous work nonstop where you're going to be making, you know, $75,000 to $175,000 a year. And that's real. We have people right now working at a lot of these data centers and some of these mega projects right now that are pulling in $175,000 a year. So the opportunity's there. The opportunity's real. When you talk to these kids, they see it. When you talk to their parents, I think they see it and understand it too. And as we educate them better and educate the community better about what construction is like, you know, and the technology and how nice the job sites are and everything, it's really changing people's minds, and they're realizing they can get right into the middle class without any college debt or anything. So just by going through an apprenticeship, so it's a great opportunity. But we're doing a ton of outreach. We're stepping up building futures. We're looking at expansion of building futures. We're obviously going to expand driving futures. We talked about the cement. We're going to need more cement drivers. We're going to need more dump truck drivers. We're going to need more everything. So last year we put 100 kids through driving futures. This year we put 200 kids through driving futures. Our goal next year is 500 kids, and that's people out of high school. That's people that are unemployed or underemployed or looking for a new job or a new career change to get right in the middle class. So we're definitely working hard with our partners, the county, the NAACP, creating Central Ohio Futures. We're doing all the outreach we can, letting all these people know about all these great union jobs. And our apprenticeship programs and training directors are really stepping up, too, as they increase their ranks and they become more creative on what they can do with their apprenticeship programs to be able to handle higher apprentice levels as well. So it's going to be a good thing. We just got to keep feeding the pipeline, and bringing people in. Because like I said, you know, this is it's a lot of work, a lot of investment already, and it's going to be a bright future here in Columbus and Central Ohio for the next 20 to 25 years.
Great time for the trades, no doubt about that. Dorsey Hager joining us on our live line, as he does each and every month. On the first Friday of each month, he's Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You can follow him at Build Central OH, and that's exactly what's happening in Central Ohio. A lot of building going on. We'll continue with Dorsey later in the show. Fred Redmond. Our first Friday with Fred. Back in a few minutes, you're listening to America's Workforce. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to Central Ohio right now. Dorsey Hager joining us on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Dorsey, I want to talk about this Community Benefit Agreement Committee, but first, last time you and I talked, it was right before the midterm elections, and you touched on that. Obviously, there's some candidates that you were pushing, labor-friendly candidates. How did we fare in Central Ohio? Give us a little rundown, if you don't mind.
Wow, that seems like years ago, months ago, but no, it was only a few weeks ago. So obviously the big one, and incredibly devastated. My wife and I were watching the election results. Next morning, we had breakfast and we talked about it, but heavily invested, not only because incredible candidate, incredible person, incredible public servant, but a close personal friend to both of us. But my wife and I were really upset about Tim Ryan. But the one thing, and you know, I gave him a couple of days because I know he was probably getting bombarded with phone calls and texts and TV interview requests and radio interview requests. But I talked to him the other day and I just said, man, you know, and Tim played quarterback at Youngstown State, you know, and just did a great job. But to use the sports analogy, I said, you left it all on the field. I said, you did everything you could. You raised a ton of money. You spoke to workers' issues, you rallied workers, you rallied unions, you got endorsements, you talked about everything we're doing with apprenticeship programs and creating pathways to the middle class and electric vehicle and just everything, and left it on the field. So, you know, my wife said, you know, what happened? And I said, well, I said, you know, kind of like Ohio State's defense, I don't have a lot of faith in Ohio anymore either. I said, we keep electing candidates who don't serve our interests very well. And you know, and I said, and the other thing, I said, you know, poor Tim, I said, you know, he did everything he could, but, you know, the Republicans knew that they were going to lose Pennsylvania and that Fetterman was going to flip that seat. So they dumped all their money in Ohio to try to keep the seat, which they did. And I said, it's just, you know, it's just tough. It's really tough. So very disappointing, but happy for the effort and everything that he did. And, you know, they say sometimes the end doesn't justify the means. And I think this is a very, very good good one here. Jennifer Bruner also, I mean, the judges, you know, that was tough. Kind of followed the top of the ticket with the disappointment, you know, at the top of the ticket. But Jennifer Bruner, it was sad to see that. On a happy note, some local races. Bill Spirlaza, a very good friend of mine, a judge that we endorsed, worked his tail off, raised a lot of money, got out there and did everything he could. And he did a great job. He got elected. I'm so excited for him. Kristen Boggs, another close personal friend of mine who served at the State House. She worked for two attorneys general, Republican and a Democrat, great legal mind, great politician, hard worker, community advocate, pro-labor, long lineage and history. She's the daughter of a former state rep and the niece of another, but she's got elected to the Court of Appeals. Her and Carly Edelstein, they'll do great, and those Court of Appeals jobs are so, so very, very important. Doug Nobles is another guy who got elected to judge here locally, and you and I talk all the time about how important these judge races are. And then the last one that just became final 2 days ago, good friend of mine, he's going to be term limited now that he got reelected. This is his last term, but Rich Brown was drawn into a gerrymandered Republican district because they wanted that seat back, and he was in House leadership, and they wanted that seat back. He was fought his butt off, was down, I think, 94 votes on election night. The provisionals and the absentees came back. He swung the race by 256. There was a 256 vote swing, so I think he ended up winning by a little over 100 votes. Now, there'll be a mandatory recount, but in Franklin County, our elections officials and our Board of Elections, they do a tremendous job. If it was 3-5 votes, I might be a little nervous, but over 100 votes, he should withstand that recount, and he'll be reelected for his last term to the State House. So there was some good and there was some bad. You look across the nation, I was happy that we kept the Senate seat in Nevada. I think Warnock's going to win the runoff this weekend in Georgia. Incredibly happy for John Fetterman. I mean, a guy that battled adversity with the stroke, and I think we all talked about when his staff put him up on that debate stage and the physical things that he was going through to rebound from that. But great race. So there were some good things and there were some bad things, and I think I was proud of a lot of House Democrats that fought their butts off across the country in districts they weren't supposed to win, that they did win, and everybody talked about this huge Republican landslide. They were going to gain 60 to 80 seats. Then they kind of tampered it back and said they were going to gain 30 seats, and then, you know, I think they only gained a handful of seats, which gives them a very slim majority in the House. So, All in all, not a bad election night, I guess.
Clearly not as bad as what many pollsters had predicted. No doubt about that. All right, let's move on to this Community Benefit Agreement Committee. And it's my understanding that the city of Columbus adopted this. Can you explain what this is all about, Dorsey?
Yeah, so speaking of politics and elections, Mayor Ginther is officially on the ballot now for his third term. He announced this week his reelection, and he'll be running again in 2023. Here in Columbus, City Council expands to 9. We have some members of City Council that are incredibly pro-labor, of course. President Shannon Harden, whose brother is an IBEW member, Christian, and then IBEW member Rob Dorrance, who's legal counsel for Act Ohio and the State Building Trades. But a couple of years ago, Mayor Ginther had reached out, and also Shannon and obviously Rob, and talked about using community benefit agreements to not only make sure that a lot of the projects that Columbus does are done on time and under budget safely, but also are doing outreach to, again, women, people of color, vets, local people, and giving them opportunities to work on these projects here as we expand our programs and do more outreach and do more work within the community. We've done 2 community benefit agreements, one on a fire station, one on the Linden Rec Center. Incredible results. Everyone's really happy. So we talked about how we could expand this. So with our partnership with the NAACP and President Nana Watson, she kind of spearheaded this. About a year of discussions, conversations, working on not only the policy part of it, but also the politics part of it within the communities and stuff. And we've developed legislation that was passed last week where we're going to establish a community benefit agreement committee, which will consist of 9 people. So there'll be labor leaders, community leaders representing the NAACP, building trades leaders, members of local government and stuff. And we will be working to going through these job sites and making recommendations to the mayor and the administration, which projects should have community benefit agreements on them based on different variables and stuff. And also tying that into, again, aspirational goals and outreach to get people, local members of the community, onto these projects, and also local contractors as well. So everybody's really excited about it. Our members are excited about it. Just you follow this up with the strengthening of fair contracting, and then also the wage theft legislation that was passed in the spring. And I told President Harden this the other morning when we were at breakfast, and also Councilman Dorns. I mean, I think this is the most pro-labor administration that we've seen in the city of Columbus, easily in my labor career, but for sure in my lifetime as well. So we're really excited about what this is not only going to do for labor, but also what it's going to do for the community. You know, a rising tide lifts all boats. And as we get more people into these union jobs and these apprenticeship programs and these opportunities, there's going to be more chances for them to get on that direct path in the middle class, which is going to solve all the problems of, you know, poverty, lack of education, lack of job training and everything. So we're really excited about it.
It's amazing. You got a pro-labor administration and you're seeing tremendous, and I mean tremendous, growth in Central Ohio. It all fits together. It's all happening. All good stuff. Good stuff. Build Central OH. That's the Twitter handle, columbusconstruction.org. Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You take care. This is our last segment in 2020. Dorsey, what happened to 2022? This year just flew by.
Tell you what, when you're out chasing multi-billion dollar projects and you're recruiting thousands of people and you're signing legislation and changing people's lives, I guess the calendar flies a little faster. So maybe we'll try to repeat the whole thing in 2023 as well, I guess.
There you go. You take care. Have a wonderful holiday. We'll talk to you in the new year. Okay, brother?
All right. You too. Thanks so much, Flash. Have a great holiday and a great new year.